Good morning, everyone. Last week we started a series that we're calling Now What? And that's a great question, especially for a time like this. It's a question I'm guessing every single one of us have been asking, because the conversations I had this week, and I had a lot of them, that question was showing up in every single conversation, one form or another. Sort of like, where do you see this going and what do you think's going to happen? Or the question about, like, now what? What's going to happen when we eventually get back into the church building together and how will that work? And I guess right now that's the word, isn't it? Guess. We're guessing at what may or may not happen and what that will look like. And it leaves us with that question, like, now what? And I certainly think when we're living in a time where, like, a roll of toilet paper costs more than a barrel of oil. Like, what is going on right now? And I want to think about this in terms of this, that I think one of the things that we can do is just acknowledge that sometimes we don't know what's best. What we maybe thought we should have done 3 weeks ago, we could have changed our mind 2 weeks ago and changed it yet again this week, and we don't know exactly, and that's true for a lot of things in life. We don't always know what's best. We do believe this, that God knows what's best. And we also believe this, at least I do, that I believe that what I'm learning, I'm not going to say right now that I'm locking down to things I've actually learned and I know these things. When I'm talking about the season we're in, I'm learning some stuff. I'm in process. But one of the learnings that I have is a relearning. And it's in the season to actually acknowledge that the things that get birthed in us in a season like this can be some of the most beautiful things of all. That the most beautiful things or the best things actually happen, find their way in the most difficult of times. Think about the year 1901 to 1927. I have a whiteboard here today. So 1901 to 1927, those are the years in which those that have been labeled to have belonged to the greatest generation, that's when they were born. That generation was marked by these character qualities that they saw that was in that generation, that they were people of integrity, that they were people of humility, that they were people that were marked by being a people that were deeply committed to one another. They were people who served well one another. And that they were people that had a really strong work ethic. That these things marked that generation. And I knew some people that were a part of that generation. I know that some of the greatest people to ever lived came out of that. And I would say that primarily because that's where my four grandparents lived. They came out of that generation, the greatest generation to have ever lived, many people say, because of these things, integrity, humility, commitment, service, and a work ethic. And I think about going to my grandparents' home, and I still go there. I don't actually go into their house. What I mean by that is I actually can go there in my memory. And you probably can too, to the places that have really mattered to you. I think about driving past their house or driving into that driveway back when and opening up that gate in the backyard and finding my way through their back door and taking a hard right and going up just a few steps to another door. And that door was always hard to unlock and to undo that door because that brass handle just turned hard, and to step in to the home where I would hear Grandma and Grandpa greet me. And we would sit at their dining room table with the window to my right or their left. And as we sat there conversing, the stories that they would tell, the laughter that we would have, the games that we'd play at that table. And I can remember a conversation in particular with my grandmother seated there. And she, I'm not sure how we got onto it, but I was older. And she started talking about the Great Depression. And on the heels of that was more of her experience. But as she described a time where people had struggled to even put food on the table at all, that the people that came and to her home that she cared for, and she talked about the difficulties of just making ends meet for her and for my grandfather and for those that were friends of hers and family. And then she said these words that she would not wish that on any generation. But what came out of that, oh, that we would learn that stuff. And I think that's another way of actually saying what I've been saying, that a person of integrity, humility, commitment, service, this work ethic, these are good qualities, and the best things actually come sometimes out of the hardest of times. I think about the story that Jeremy got us going on last week, the 40 years of Moses being in that area of Egypt where he was growing up in the palace with all the royalties, and then leaving that because he identified with the Hebrew people to make 40 years out in the wilderness before he met up with God at a burning bush, and God invited him to go back to Egypt to free God's people there. And at 80 years old, the 40 and the 40 equals 80, he went back. And then the plagues that came down on Egypt, and eventually the Pharaoh relenting for the people to go. And then a 40-year period of them wandering in the desert. This 40, 40, 40, it seems like a pretty important biblical number because it is. We also see that Jesus fasted for 40 days. So did Elijah. So did Moses. So did Joshua. 40 days. It's recorded that way. It's a biblical number. Children that are here, maybe you could even tell your parents, how many days did it rain? And how many nights did it rain when the earth was flooded? It was 40. 40 days and 40 nights. And I want to look at the 40 years that were post being freed from slavery. We're in the book of Exodus, chapter 13, and I just want to read these words from chapter 13, verse 17. When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them on the road through the Philistine country, though it was shorter. That's to be noted. It's a shorter distance, but God didn't take them there. I would think this is the best way to go, but we don't always know what's best. And sometimes God knows what's best, and we can't see it. It was shorter. For God said, if they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. So God led the people around by the desert road toward the Red Sea. Now, I want to draw a map for you, and for sure, this map, in no way is this thing going to be to scale. But I just want to give you a picture of what is happening in this story. Where are they? This is the Nile River Basin and the Nile River in the area of Egypt, being in this region. In this area, the Nile River Basin, there's an area called Ramses, where the journey from Egypt begins, out of this area right here. God delivered them from slavery through Moses. The Pharaoh relents, and they start their journey. Now, there are some bodies of water in this area. Up here, we have the Great Sea. We have, of course, the Red Sea that comes through this region like so. And then we have over here in this area a gulf and a large body of water over here. So the Red Sea is here. Over here, we have the Dead Sea. And in this region, God is going to lead his people out of slavery. Now, the quickest route, because they eventually end up at a place called Moab, and then go straight off the map at that point, but they begin here, and they're going to go to a place called Moab, but God says that he's not going to take them by the shortest route, because this area called Sur is the area of the Philistines. This area is the shortest route, but God says, I have a better direction for you. And so with a pillar of fire by night and by a cloud by day, God takes them down a desert road. And eventually, we see it right here in verse 20. It says, after leaving Succoth, which means they made it down to Succoth, they went up, and then in chapter 14, you see they make it to a place called Migdal. They're at Migdal. From Migdal, they make their way up, and we can see it in verse 2. They make their way opposite that of Baal Zephon. So they make their way opposite of that, encamped right about in there on the Red Sea. Now look at that journey. Does that make any sense that you would travel this direction, that direction, then back up another direction to stop at the edge of the Red Sea when the Egyptian army is over here watching the entire journey. And what do? They decide, let's attack. They probably are looking, wondering, what are these people doing? This pillar of fire and this cloud, this thing must be lost. They're lost. They're wandering in the desert. These people don't know what they're doing. Let's go capture them and bring them back. To which God's answer is to open up the waters with a staff from Moses' hand, strikes the waters. The waters go to the left and the right. The Israelites walk through. The Hebrew people are safe. When the Egyptians make their way into the water, he collapses the walls of the water on them. Now you would think the next move for God would be, or at least I would think, the way I would think would be, now take your fastest route around the Philistines and get up to Moab. But that is not what they do. God takes them this direction, down to a place called Marah, where the waters were bitter. They threw wood into the water and were instructed to stir the waters, and they became sweet in order to drink. They make their way down to this region here, which is Mount Sinai. They receive the Ten Commandments. They make their way all the way up into this region. They're getting close to Moab, but they stop in here and make their way back down into this region, all the way back up again toward Moab. And you look at that and think, why are they traveling like this? Wandering down, to wander up, to wander back down, to go back up, to go back down, to go back up again. All of this ought to tell us that God is less concerned about the destination, physical destination, than he is the formation. He's less concerned about that which is happening with our feet than that which is happening in our heart. Less concerned about where we're moving and more about how he is moving us, what he's doing on the inside of us. Which leads me back to this. Sometimes we don't know what direction we should actually take. God does. Because the journey is about the change of our hearts. The journey is that even when things are tough, even when the road is long, even when it goes up and down and down and back up and down and back up, even then, God can do the most amazing work in the inside of us if we just trust him. I'm going to take you back to that dining room table of my grandma and grandpa's, and I know you won't be able to get there the same way that I can, because my memory of it, I can see it. I can see the color of the walls. I even have this ability to remember it with my olfactory. Like, I have this memory of the smell of the place, my grandmother's cooking. And Grandma and I were seated there, and I asked her a question. I was a bit older and just said, "Hey, Grandma, there's been something that I've always loved about your home. And I just wonder what's behind it. Why you do what you do?" Because every time I walked into her home, my grandmother would offer me something to eat. And if I said, "No, that's all right, I just ate, Grandma," she goes, "Oh, let me get you something." And she would want to get me something anyway. And if not that, at least something to drink every time I came through the door. And I said, "Grandma, that's so cool that you've always done that. Why?" And she didn't answer right away. She paused. And then when she answered, I went, "Oh, that's beautiful." She said, "Well, maybe it goes back to when things were so hard. And there were people that actually came into the door. My sisters or brothers or friends or neighbors would come into the door. And I would ask if you had something to eat. And sometimes they would say no. Not for a couple days." And she said, "So I would go to my cupboard. And we didn't have much, but I would find something and make something for them." Ah, man, that is so beautiful. It's humility that counts the other as more important than you. It's that commitment to the cause of your life and to those that are around you. It's what made that generation so beautiful in serving first. That was the mark of who they were, and it was the mark of my grandmother. And it leads me to think about the season that we're in. Like, what now? Well, we feel sometimes like we're going up and down and up and down and up and down. And we just want to say, can I just grab a hold of something and get over there? And it seems right to me that we would just do this. I wonder if we could just rest a bit on that and answer two questions today. If you're by yourself, reflect on them. Call a friend. You can email me. Reflect on these questions. If you're with your family, I would invite you to hit the button at the end of this and shut this off and then answer these questions as part of your worship. What is God trying to form in me right now? What is his best work in these difficult times right now in me? And secondly, where do I sense God inviting me to trust him more? As you worship him, by thinking about these questions, may God bless you. And may he keep you. May he make his face to shine upon you and give you his peace. Amen.